There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday. Another hour of live local talk. Of course, phone lines 343-0106. So is the text number, same one. And we've got that talkback feature, which is one of the many accessories on your brand new FM Talk 106.5 app. Once you download it, free download from Apple's app store, or go to Google Play for Android users, and just look for FMTALK 1065. I see our logo, download it, and you get the streaming wherever you got a signal on your phone. You also get the podcast 55 hours a week of that there. In addition to the latest traffic information, weather information, you've got show schedules on there. You've got our social media feeds, news feeds on there. So check it all out. It's the FM Talk 1065 app. All right. And it's time, and it's a Thursday, for me to say hello to my friend, Robert Kennedy Jr. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, how you doing today, man?
I think I'm good. The weekend is close. It looks like the tropical whatever thing, Fred, is disorganized and not heading this way. So I'm good.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed on that one.
But the nice thing is, I feel warm and fuzzy about the amount of money we're spending in our country. It brings me such joy each morning that I think we're making great fiscal decisions in Washington.
You know, Sean, there are several weeks where you and I have good clash and are doing the typical left-right conversation for your entertainment pleasure.
That's right.
But this is one where I think you and I are probably going to be a little bit more aligned than the letters next to our name suggest.
Yeah, it's, I was looking through this, even if we take, you have the two different bills. Let's just look at the $1.3 trillion bill that was passed through the Senate, goes to the House, and we'll see what happens there. But when you look at that, and I guess, simplistically, you would go, okay, that's $1.3 trillion in infrastructure, and you're picturing interstates and bridges and, all the things, paving roads and all these, making roads bigger and all. And then you go through and look, and it's actually the part that I picture as infrastructure is the smallest part, really, of the infrastructure bill. I mean, even without the $3.5 trillion add-on, like roads and bridges account for $550 billion, I think.
Yeah, let's cross off the part that we can agree on, and then we'll debate the other. So when you talk about traditional infrastructure, so roads, bridges, broadband, stringing water lines, stuff like that,
yeah.
I don't think there's anybody arguing that there should be a continued investment in infrastructure, and it's something that has transcended administrations, right?
Yep.
So, check. We've got that part, which is in this larger part, and that's generally a good thing. When you start talking about the stuff that's on the periphery, where it could be subject to interpretation, what infrastructure is, now we get into the political paginations that actually make you have a job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you come on here every week. And so you can argue about the legitimacy of that and these huge bills that are thousands of pages with things, buried in there that it's almost impossible to find unless you're looking through it with a fine-tooth comb. That's an opportunity for us collectively to do better, right? And that's something we've got to figure out. I've been a big advocate of the line item veto.
Mm-hmm.
I know that was shot down as or being declared as unconstitutional during the Clinton administration. But something like that, I think, would definitely serve us well.
And it's one thing to look at it from the other side of this coin, not politically, but the other side, and say, if items have to be put into bills that shroud what they are, right? You got the whatever bill. Mm-hmm. You and I talked about during CARES Act too, you know, as well. You have these bills that, and then you put some other stuff that's really, you got to really stretch to call it part of whatever the bill is, not just this infrastructure bill. It's been done forever.
Right.
Then you're telling me you don't have a lot of faith in the American people supporting that. Then why are you pushing it?
Well, that's the system, right?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it just kind of is what it is. And that's not a left or right thing, right? Everyone does that. I would love to have that, you know, one-page, two-page executive summary, which says, this is what we're trying to do, this is what it cost, and this is what I think we're going to get for it, how long it's going to take, right? I would love it to be that simple. But whether you're talking about a Democratic-controlled administration at the federal level or a Republican-controlled supermajority at the state level, when you start looking at what's actually written, there's that element of gobbledygook everywhere.
Yeah, and they wonder why, you know, I think coronavirus has a higher rating in polling out there for popularity than Congress.
I don't know that I would go quite that far with
Titan.
This is one of the reasons why folks look at people sitting in elected office and to a certain extent the bureaucratic infrastructure that supports those in elected offices. And just kind of wants to throw their hands up, you know, because, again, when you start talking about the ability to shroud what you're actually doing and then the huge amounts of money that we're talking about in excess of what we actually need, it definitely should give all of us who are concerned about what's happening with our government a minute of pause.
All right. What else is on your mind?
So, that was the first thing. The second thing was I thought we needed to circle back to the conversation about who the individual who will be formally the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo.
He thought he did a great job.
You and I,
he said,
both predicted that this eventuality was going to happen.
Yeah, he said, I think I did a really good job, or I'm paraphrasing there. I'm like, okay, well, see how that worked out.
Yeah, well, what we said was the criteria was in order for someone to resign, the entire opposite party has to be opposed to them, and then they have to lose support within their caucus. And I think as you ended up counting the numbers first in the state legislature there in New York proper, and then the folks who you would have thought would have been allies had it been another more political issue as opposed to this one, which was criminal, there was just nowhere for him to go. Right? He was literally boxed in, and he did the thing he needed to do, which was resign. And so extending off what we talked about last week as well, is given the fact that this has happened so early, I don't think it's going to have any medium or long-term effects for the Democratic Party because he'll be a footnote.
Yeah, because if people didn't catch our conversation last week, my question was it this worry that, because he not just being a governor, right, but he was a governor of note because of the being lifted up at a rank higher than governor to be a counter to former President Trump when it came to COVID. So that's why, you know, because I thought, hey, if it's just a Democrat governor, same thing I'd say Republican, the rest of the party is not responsible for their knucklehead behavior. But he had this kind of higher level. And I think, I think that's one of the reasons they all turned on him.
Now, here's one of the aspects of the conversation that I found very interesting when I was watching some of the banter back and forth in social media, and that's the idea as to whether or not he should still be impeached, even though he has actually left office. I know we talked about this a lot in the tail days of President Trump's administration, and I think there is a viable argument that suggest he should continue down the impeachment proceeding path.
Yeah, and I wonder about that, because another thing that we've talked about over time is like the October surprises, right? All these charges that get leveled in presidential cycles and in other general elections, they'll get leveled and then they just kind of disappear. And since I was a kid,
right,
I was frustrated. I'm like, if they did the wrong thing, this horrible thing you brought out that you said they did and you shouldn't vote for them, then dang it, then you need to follow through. And, you know, and so it's kind of a weird, he's now politically impotent there, but if you have to set a standard, don't you? I mean, if you have made these accusations and say this is criminal, and yeah, I know the civil case, but you said it's criminal and not become, you know, against the job of the governor of New York, then you have to follow through.
Yeah, but for me, I'm passionate about accountability. And taking investigations, whatever investigation that you have, to its logical conclusion with you know, a set of conclusions and then subsequent recommendations, I think it's always appropriate. Particularly, you know, given the nature of what we're talking about here, I don't want the next generation of persons saying something about how they, I don't know exactly what the language was to use, but something to the effect that the line got moved on him to suggest that it was the line and not his behavior. I definitely think there's some teachable moments that come out of that as well.
All right. Just joining us, talking to Robert Kennedy Jr., of course, Kennedy for Alabama tonight, 6 o'clock.
Yes, yes. So this is our last original content episode of season four. And so we've been very happy about, you know, the folks we've had on so far. And tonight we're going to wrap up with two journalists. So first we're going to have your friend of mine, Dale Leash,
yeah,
from Lanyap, who will be previewing what will come out on Lanyap next week, which is basically the municipal elections. And I know you have spent a lot of time, and Jeff Poore as well, focused on the mayoral races. And we've interviewed three of the mayoral candidates on Kennedy for Alabama. But I'm really looking forward to having a conversation with Dale about what's happening at the municipal level. And then, in addition to that, we are honored to welcome Mr. Arthur Mack, who is writing for the Call News.
Mm-hmm.
Learned a little bit about what he's doing in terms of, he's a sports writer, and kind of seeing what the sports outlook is for our area. And then getting into some of his personal book writing. He has a number of books, one of which we've read as well. So just learning more about him and his career. So very excited. 6 o'clock tonight.
All right. It's good stuff. And speaking of municipal elections, let's, as we're less than 2 weeks out, it's kind of, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm in the city, but you're still concerned with what goes on in the city, right? Even though you're not a resident.
Sure.
Okay. And we'll see, even after last hour, y'all, I'll talk to Robert, even though he's not a resident. I'd rather him be a resident of the city to talk with him, but it's good. If I've given no other choice, I'll talk to somebody who wouldn't inside the city limits. Well, I mean, what do you, like, public safety, for example. So, you know, that's one of the main questions. So the annexation, sure, Amtrak, but public safety is one of the questions I ask all people running for city council and for mayor. And what's to be done to improve on this? And people say, hey, this trend is nationwide. Okay, but it's still not an excuse for not trying. I don't live nationwide. I live here, you know? What,
yeah.
Sure. What do we do?
So, yeah, two disclosures right off the bat. The first is that we've been supportive of Carlos Finley's campaign. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm throwing things in his direction. I just want to say it,
mm-hmm,
period, point blank, so everybody knows that. And second, I am a resident of Pritchard, and that is where my parents built a house after we moved here to Mobile, Alabama, after my father retired from the military. But having said both of those, you know, it's interesting because you can, generally speaking, link crime to one of a number of different categories. One is poverty, the other is mental health, the third is substance abuse, and then the fourth category I'm going to generally refer to as idleness, right? So just think about knuckleheads getting themselves in trouble because they don't have anything else to do, that sort of thing.
Right.
And so if you look at what Mayor Stimson was talking about on the Jeff Poore show, he was mostly focused in kind of the knucklehead category and talking about this idea of, you know, parental involvement, how you raise your kids and stuff like that, right? And again, that's one of the four categories. But when you start talking about those other two, mental health, substance abuse, those are two things that are huge root causes. And as you look around our area here in Alabama and even in the Southeast, you can see that there are a number of different municipalities that are trying to attach those two components as well. And then that last component that we talked about was poverty, right? And so we know that, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. And so starting first with education and then, you know, employment training and getting people into good high-paying jobs, the more that you're capable of doing that, the less likely somebody's going to go into a life of crime. And so, you know, I like some of the things that are being said about possible solutions. I was really interested in some of the reactions from your listeners when they were using the Pritchard examples and people not wanting to live here and stuff like that. But yeah, that's just kind of what my cut is.
You know, as I said, if I have two candidates that are equally qualified, I'm going to take the Mobile candidate. I'm going to tell you, right? I'm a homer. Mm-hmm. But I don't. At the same time, I talk to law enforcement folks from municipal or county level, and they tell me they're working their butts off to recruit people as it is. You know, and to put any bigger encumbrance on that, I don't know you can do that. And where is that sea change where all of a sudden, you know, let's say you tried to start that today. okay, and you try to, like, Carlos Finley was talking about, Judge Finley said, you know, have these blighted houses and have folks in law enforcement be able to live in them for free as part of, you know, being an officer.
Sure.
But if it's a real tough neighborhood, I'm just going to tell you, you know me long enough, if it's a real tough neighborhood, that's the last place I'm going to move my family in. I don't if I have a choice.
Yeah, I actually want to challenge that assumption, and I'm going to do this intentionally.
Okay.
So before we moved to Pritchard, we lived in Tolmanville, right? And then that's where my grandmother lived. We lived with her for a year. And then we also had aunts and uncles that were down the bottom, right? So the areas that, from a demographic standpoint, have a tendency to be highly African-American, right? It's just kind of intuitive that that's where we live.
Right.
And so, I'm sorry, after being away and moving back home, we could have moved anywhere. We could have moved into Timber Creek and Spanish Fort if we wanted to, or into a house on Government Street. But we made the choice that we were going to come into the house that I grew up in. And so there's an assumption that if the offer is made, that a person's not going to take the offer. So that's what's being articulated as a reason not to make the offer. I think you make the offer first and see if the offer gets more people into the community, because that's the objective. The belief is that if you live in an area, you're going to be concerned about the area that you leave. So it's not only the residents that are there, but it's also the relationship of the person in law enforcement. And so I think it's the distinction between being maybe, and I can't speak for Carlos Finley, he can speak for himself, but it may be the difference between it being an offer that allows them to have housing and not necessarily have the cost associated with that housing, so they end up with more discretionary income by being a little bit closer to the problem, than to, hey, if you still make the decision that you want to live in Spanish Fort and Community Coastal Bay, you know, that's a whole other part of the conversation. But again, it's an offer. In my mind, it's more of an offer, not necessarily an edict.
Very good. And before we wrap, I'm looking at a video. I'd like, my friend is everywhere, y'all. He's on the radio. He's, of course, on the radio around the state. You can read what he says. You could do, but now in video, I'm looking at a video of you. Tell me about this.
Yes, so I think the timing is apropos. So shout out to the Mobile County Emergency Management Agency, who has recently launched its app product, where you can get alerts about what's happening from a weather standpoint and other emergency areas. And under the Kennedy Strategic Communications brand, we had the opportunity to facilitate the video that is being aired on their website right now, and that you can also view if you download their app. So, yes, we were very fortunate and blessed to have that opportunity. And, you know, most of the stuff that we do is not political, right?
That's right.
So it was good to have the opportunity to partner with them on that particular initiative.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. And I have, by the way, I have that same shirt. Just want to let you know. I have that same exact shirt. All right.
I think we shop at the same store.
Yes, very much so. Tonight, 6 o'clock, Kennedy for Alabama. Y'all check it out. And, Robert, as always, I appreciate our conversations, and we'll talk soon.
All right, you take care now.
Hey, you too. Hey, hold on if you can. When I go to the break, I want to ask you something. Coming right back for Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. Get some of these texts about at least the idea this AL.com columnist has said for requiring vaccine in violation of state law. Like Terry said, if the SEC requires vaccines for football games, then the AG needs to file racketeering charges against them for conspiring to violate Alabama law. We'll get to that in more of those texts in just a second. To the phones, and Big D in Mobile up next. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
Hey, 1.9 sounds better than 2, don't it?
Yeah, it's like, 1.99 sounds better than $2.
Right. Yeah, it's the way you buy cars. You know, a 29.999 car sounds better than 30,000, but hey,
yeah.
So we're getting $500 billion, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not a civil engineer and I'm not an estimator, but in reality, spread out nationwide, how much is...
Great question.
And then you take into consideration the lobbyists up there that they're going to mark these contracts up three or four prices. How much is 500? Was that two or three bridges per state, or maybe a mile or two?
Yeah, I don't. And does each state get an equal amount, or you know, is it probably?
Yeah. I mean, how much is the I-10 bridge? Yeah. 110 billion. I mean, come on.
It's a key. Move that number.
So you know, who knows what's going on in Kansas, and I'm sure they need it. But
yep.
This is a joke, and you got what, 19 Republicans that voted for it?
Yeah, because what they're going to say is...
I know Romney and your Murkowskis and your blah, 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 but I know your buddy Lindsey Graham, he voted for it, didn't he?
My buddy Lindsey Graham. Don't get me started. If people don't know what Big D said, like, I'm the most un-Lindsey Graham guy around, but the... How about Vitter out of Mississippi, right? You got some...
I mean, and then they opened the door, you know, for the backside, you know what I mean? I just cannot understand what I mean, and I know we vote, and everybody says, "Oh, we're a nation of the people," and you do what we say. But
I can't
understand. I just cannot understand what we're getting out of this. And like I said, you open the door for the backside, the 3.5.
Yeah, because you know Pelosi is going to put that together.
$500 billion. Like I said, everything is more expensive than we think it is. In the grand scheme of things, $500 billion will not do nothing for this nation or the infrastructure. So, I mean, that's a joke. And
yeah, how about that? We go five. We could possibly, if they meld that $3.5 trillion wish list bill to this one in the House and they vote that through, we could be our grandchildren, Big D, our great grandchildren, are on the hook for $5 trillion. It really netted down to, you know, how much. How many bridges and roads got built for that? You know, I mean, that's how much did we pay for it?
Like I said, that $500 billion nationwide, that's nothing. That is absolutely nothing. But I'll hang up and
thank you, man.
Appreciate you, Sean.
Hey, appreciate you. Appreciate the call. See, Big D's frustration is like mine. It gets wrapped up in a discussion of infrastructure, which is something that has been bipartisan and popular and things people could work on together and it's roads and bridges and those kind of things. But now it's not. Now they take the old brand name. It's like, some store buys the brand name from, like, if they're going out of business, they buy the brand name that's popular and then they mess everything up and you go in there, you're like, wait a second, this is not the sandwich I thought it was. I mean, this is kind of what infrastructure is. It was a good brand name, right? Popular brand name. And now we have this. All right, back to the phones. And Bill in Mobile's up next. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Matt? I just wanted to thank you for giving us sound analysis there and for not being a nut. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
And I really mean that. I mean, and that's part of the reason why I call is because I got a question about this vaccine mandate. Stuff that's being bandied about these proposals. I heard today that the head of the Department of Education encourages all teachers that there should be vaccine mandates for all teachers. And what he said was that, because children cannot be vaccinated, this would be a way to protect them. But at the same time, I read in the literature studies and studies out of the Cleveland Clinic and from Israel and all these other places that talk about the viral load and asymptomatic viral load that a lot of vaccinated individuals carry is just as high as the unvaccinated. So my question is, would not a vaccinated person also put these children at risk? And not only that, but... isn't it kind of a wash at this point? I know you follow it too.
I do.
So
how about this? I follow it like you, and I wake up every morning scratching my head as well, right? Because there's so many contrary things. I try to, get the information came that day, and then kind of hold it up against what information was out yesterday, and does this make sense, right? Does this?
So I'm not crazy for seeing the contradiction in there.
Or both of us are crazy. That may possibly okay. It's the two of us, but no, it's and on this vaccinated people carrying COVID thing, it's real. All the blame on the unvaccinated. I would switch it around and say, well, then there's responsibility, you know, and this is why they're saying they're going to have to put people back in masks, even if you had the vaccine, right? That was the carrot they hung out. Hey, you get vaccinated, it's back to normal, no mask, and you're out you're doing whatever. You're wrestling with people, whatever you want to, giving okay. hugs to grandma, whatever it is. And now it's not. And so to say that they know how, so we're going to mandate these vaccines for the teachers. Uh-huh. And then the teacher, yeah. What about the first teacher that has the viral? They don't get, and actually, is it more dangerous? And I'm not, once again, it's not anti-vaccine. Because, but somebody could not know they're sick.
You read other articles. There's new studies coming out now that talk about, what do they call it, ADE, antibody-dependent enhancement. And that, what are we doing here? It's the premise there. Now, all the data isn't in, but it's starting to look like the vaccinated are, because the variants are, yep. you know, mutating and the vaccine efficacy is going down, that these variants are going to be even more wacky.
You know, if they would come out and say that the vaccine is not, it's a therapeutic, right? Because I think we have this old idea, I'm pointing at myself, that, you know, the stuff I got vaccinated for when I was a kid or whatever, that you got it and you're done, right? It's finished, all right? I've got protection for that. And this thing doesn't work that same way. But they painted it that way. I wish they would have said, hey, this is better than having no protection, right? You'll get better faster and all those things. But don't paint a picture that is now being proven not to be the case.
Yeah.
It's the two of us are crazy.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thanks for the call. Once again, it's not. Here's the problem. People want to go like it's all in or all out, like anti-vax or pro everything. I think there's a lot of us that are somewhere in the middle. I think the vaccine for a lot of folks is a good idea. It's a good idea. At the same time, to have that conversation honestly, you got to say, but there are these nuances to it, right? And I know they at a governmental level, they worry about saying anything that would be like keep people from getting the vaccine. But what I think happens is if you leave things out, but if you leave things out and then you got to come back and answer for them later, then you further erode the confidence that people have in what you're saying. And I think that was undermined from last year. And I think it does a disservice to the message to try to get more people to get vaccines. Let me do this. I'm going to take one call here before we go to the break, and then I'm come back to the others, because I see it is my buddy, Hal Sherrick from Fox 10. Hey, Hal.
Hey, Sean. How you doing today?
Man, good. Call me later. We got to talk fishing. So what's up?
That's right. No, I just wanted to let you know, I was listening in as I'm driving down to Orange Beach to do a story, as I do often, and I heard the last caller had some questions about the vaccinations, mandatory or not, how it affects schools and kids, and I did attend a press
and
Tyler
yeah.
had yesterday, and they did make a point, not whether vaccinations mandatory were right or wrong, or he was going to make them or not, but the point was, and it makes a lot of sense, their big concern for teachers in the classroom is that when you consider the number of kids versus the much smaller number of teachers that teach those children, if a teacher or two or 10 were to catch COVID and be out, that could shut down an entire school.
Mm-hmm.
So just food for thought for people to think about, you know, neither here nor there on sides. I'm just... that was just one point he made that did make sense. I wanted to...
Okay, well, no, that's good, because I didn't know if we were talking about specifically Superintendent Tyler, or we're talking about what came out of national presser.
Superintendent Tyler making that comment yesterday when some of the questions came up. And it was a valid point, I thought. I just thought your viewers might like to hear that side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate that info. And can you give us a preview on what you're working on for tonight? Come on.
Actually, very interesting story. The city of Orange Beach had an intern over the summer, goes to UAB, that did a data analysis of that crazy U-turn down on Perdido Beach Boulevard that's been, that ALDOT put in. Just a, it's been an operation for a couple of years now. I think you're familiar with what I'm talking about. And anyway, it turns out with his data analysis on accidents, it is significantly cut down on the number of accidents and the severity of accidents they've had there.
So the intern figured it out.
So I'm going to, you know, it, they thought that that would be the case. No one really took the time to do this, the post-construction study. And so this intern did, and it's exciting to see that what everybody thought would happen has happened. So I'm going to intern before he heads back to Birmingham and about the time he put into this. And, you know, it may be aggravating and taking a little getting used to for some of us drivers, but it's doing its job when you consider those left-turn accidents, those T-bone accidents, the damage they can cause to vehicles, the physical injury they can cause. That crazy U-turn they put in down there has alleviated a lot of that.
Well, I'll be checking that out. That's a good story. That makes me smile. That's good stuff. All right, Hal.
Good talking to you, Sean. We'll talk fishing soon.
All right. Give me a holler. Hal Sherrick from Fox 10. One of the good guys for sure out there. Wasn't it right on red? Wasn't that some Utes that... Am I remembering that correctly? I'll have to get on the Google so they can further track me here. But what wasn't it like a college class or something like that where they came up with the idea of why can't we have right on red? I think I remember that right.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. This text, it all makes us not know whether to scratch our watch or wind our butt. That's for sure. Dan says, also remember, this is more like the influenza vaccine and not like your MMR vax. True. I'm just saying the way people, you know, kind of took it in, they probably should have done more to, you know, tell folks that. This unnamed texter said, if everyone got vaccinated, viral load wouldn't be a concern. Polio, smallpox, and other illnesses survive in our environment because most are vaccinated. It is not an issue. Also, pertussis and hepatitis B are both protein subunit vaccines, just like the COVID-19 vaccine. So nothing new about developing vaccines that way. I know that's what Dr. Scott Chavers told me. He said the formula for that vaccine was not new. But maybe they put in some new numbers, you know, to stick with the analogy. But yeah, that was not something new. Terry, so if we vaccinate teachers to prop kids, I guess maybe protect kids, we don't have the likelihood of vaccinated teachers having asymptomatic COVID and spreading it to kids without knowing. There we go. By the way, nobody answered my question. Monty's saying, I'd like to know who comes up with the arbitrary speed limits. There's no rhyme or reason that I can discern. I had a show about that way back. I need to do another show about that, Monty. But the right on red, and I Google it. Maybe a teacher told us something that they made up in the old days and that's been with me all these years. Maybe they're trying to encourage young minds because I Googled it and I couldn't find it. But I thought it was like high school kids or a college kid or something like that that came up with the, like, why can't we take a right on red? I'll have to keep Googling that. If I get information, I'll let you know. All right, to the telephones, and Gary in Mobile up next. Hey, Gary.
Hey, how you doing today, Sean?
I'm great, man. How about you?
I normally call about fishing and hunting, but anyway, this vaccination thing's got me puzzled. I'm a conservative. In fact, I'm almost a libertarian.
Okay.
But I don't understand the such a high reluctance to get the people to get vaccinated. If you just look at the CDC data, and I realize some people don't believe any data now,
yep,
nowadays it's public, but if you look at it, you know, the case rate goes down the higher the percentage of vaccinated people. My wife's a surgical nurse. A doctor told her yesterday that an extremely high percentage of the cases in mobile infirmary right now are young adults that have not been vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And because most seniors have been, you know, a high percentage of seniors have been vaccinated. And I realize this new variant, is more resistant apparently to the vaccine, but still, and I realize some people may have some kind of reaction to the vaccination, but you know, when we were young and growing up, when they came out with vaccinations, I don't know what the percentage is, but I would say 98 to 99% of the people just went along with it, trusting that it was the right thing to do. And we basically eliminated or drastically reduced a lot of diseases by doing that.
Yep.
And I just don't get it. I'm missing something.
Well, we're living in another world now, right? I mean, I know that sounds cliche, but it's been politicized, which I don't understand, because, you know, they try to make it like Trump supporters wouldn't get a vaccine. Heck, Trump, it was former President Trump's Operation Warp Speed that developed the, you know, put the shield there the vaccine, and he got the vaccine. Melania did. So I don't buy that, you know, that it's, oh, it's Trump people. But I don't know what it is. But people, you know, people have their questions out there. There's the thing. You look at the vaccine. Is it a good thing for most people? Yes. Do I also get in the position where I want to defend their liberty not to get it? I do. You know, that's where I'm torn on that.
I don't think anybody should be forced to do it. I'm just saying I don't understand. And I understand some reluctance, but I just don't understand the high percentage of people that are reluctant. I don't understand that.
And I don't either. Maybe one day we'll look back on this, Gary, and we'll understand more of what was going on. I appreciate your call. Thank you for chiming in.
Thank you.
Tim reminded me of one of the conversations I had. He's on the text line. He said, Sam Cochran told you that had to do with the number of entrances and exits on a highway. So there you go, Monty. Thank you, Tim, for reminding me of that. Because I did. We asked that question. I think we were talking about the speed on a section of Schillinger or somewhere like that. And people were asking, hey, why is the speed limit this and that? And it is the number of, you know, places you can get onto that road in a certain distance. And that's how they gauge speed limits. I still got to get my right on red answer here. Maybe we'll do that sometime between now and tomorrow. Paul Feinbaum shows on the way next. Y'all have a great one.